evening, everybody. My name is Chuck, and I am powerless over alcohol. I want to thank Sam for asking me. You know, I guess that's a sign that I must be at least getting some of this right. My sobriety date is August 5th, 2007. And I have a home group. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor other guys. And that has been one of the greatest joys of being in this program. You know, I was supposed to tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I truly believe I was one of those freeze-dried alcoholics. I was a liar, thief, and a cheat before I took my first drink. And when I took that first drink at age 13, everything changed. I was afraid of the dark before I took that first drink. You know, and I had zero net worth, zero self-esteem. I hated the family I was born to. I was born in one of those families that, you know, they had what we needed, not what we wanted. And being the selfish, self-centered person I was, you know, I took that as, you know, they don't love me, you know. And like I said, I took my first drink at 13, and my life changed. I made a decision that day that that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And want y'all know I gave it a pretty good shot, you know. And it just took off from there. I vaguely remember not drinking every day, and I vaguely remember not drinking in the morning. And you know, and I'm not gonna lie, I had a good time. By the time I was 14, I was full blown addict and alcoholic. I was going into state stores. I was getting in all the nightclubs down in North Carolina. You know, back in the 70s, man, you know, I had a ball. I was 7 foot tall. I had 12 inches of afro and 4 inches of platform shoes. And I had a 31 inch waist. So I had a ball, you know. And, you know, I really thought I was going to go through life, you know, just this big old party. And drugs are part of my story. Back in the 70s, I did anything that came across the table. And, you know, I don't know what happened. You know, I went from this guy that all the girls wanted to dance with to why is he in my face with that stinking breath? You know, and I was the last one to know. You know, I managed to land a fairly decent job. And, you know, I can remember about 5 years into that job thinking, I'm not going to make it. You know, by then I was drinking in the morning just to be able to drink a cup of coffee or have have an egg sandwich for breakfast. I could not function without drinking. And it had been that way for a long time. And, you know, I just never could stop drinking. I remember my boss pulling me in the office one day and he said, Chuck, he said, I like to drink just like the next man. He said, you think you can wait till the weekend? And I thought, man, that's a good idea. You know, and you know, by that afternoon, I had forgot all about that, man. When I got off work, man, I made that turn into the liquor store. By this time, I was drinking about a half a pint on the way to work. I finished that off, get me a pint for the ride home. I'm living in Suitland, Maryland, working in Chantilly, Virginia. And, you know, I'd get home, and I'd get at least a fifth to get me through the night. And if you're an alcoholic and you live in Maryland, well, that is an alcoholic's paradise. They got these drive-through windows that open at 6 in the morning, and back then they didn't close at 2 a.m. You didn't even have to stag out the car. You just, if you didn't hit that yellow post, man, you had it made. And, you know, and it seems no matter how much alcohol I purchased, it was never enough. The more I had, the more I drank. And, you know, I'd pull up in that liquor store parking lot, man, about 5:45 in the morning, and the guy would be sitting there reading the newspaper, and I'd just cuss him out. You know, this SOB know I got to go to work. Why he can't open this window and just let me, you know, so I could be at work on time. And, you know, I would cuss this man out every morning, man. It was routine. And, you know, I remember one time, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know if I chose not to drink that morning or didn't have any money that morning, but I went to work one morning and, didn't drink. Man, I was a nervous wreck. And, probably about 1:30 in the afternoon, I had a seizure, you know, and I was a heavy equipment operator. And, man, you know, I kind of found out what happened. You know, it was because my blood alcohol level was getting low. And, you know, I got on a mission. You know, I didn't have another seizure for 4 years. That was a lot of drinking. And at this point in my drinking, man, I thought I could not quit. And it never dawned on me to quit. You know, I thought back then if I could just keep them from smelling it on my breath that, you know, I could do this. And I tried everything. Somebody say, well, if you put a penny in your tongue, they can't smell it. Man, I drank a half a pint, put about 30 cents under my tongue, man. It still smells. And this is the way I was thinking, man. I was steady searching for that cover-up. You know, I hated those people that did drugs because they could do that and nobody could smell it. You know, and somebody told me one time, chew a piece of brown paper bag. Drink a half pint, chew up half a Safeway bag, and they would still smell that stuff on my breath. And, I remember one Christmas, Christmas Eve, 1982. Started drinking that morning, routine, stopped at the liquor store on the way out. It's Christmas Eve, so everybody on the job was drinking. You know, and I'd drink all day. And I'd pick the lady I was living up with at the time up. And she wanted to go take a Christmas gift to one of her friends. And, you know, I had been drinking all day. And I made a left turn in front of this car. And, of course, they ended up T-boning me. And this guy, you know, he had his kids in there. Wife and Christmas gifts in the trunk, you know, and the lady I was with, she had got carted off to the hospital, and I was sitting in the back of that police car, man, and you know, I was swearing on everything holy that I would never drink and drive again, and you know, one cop riding shotgun, he got out and he snatched me up by my shirt collar. And he said, I can smell the alcohol all over you. He said, I got a plate of food up there. He said, it's Christmas Eve. I know you ladies just went to the hospital and everything. He said, I'm opening that plate of food and start eating. He said, but if my partner smell it, you know, we're going to bury you so deep under the jail, they're going to have to bring sunshine to you. And, man, for about the next 30 minutes, I don't think I took two breaths in the back of that car. Man, I was holding my breath for all it was worth. And, you know, finally they let me go. And I rode home with the tow truck driver. Now, about 45 minutes early, I'd sworn everything I knew that I would never drink and drive again. And I went in the house, got that half gallon off the kitchen counter, and I drank it straight out the bottle. And I got him a girlfriend at the time, which was in my driveway, and I proceeded over to the hospital to see how she was. And, you know, I don't know if I just don't remember. I don't know what happened, if I've never heard anything else, you know. But that's what makes me an alcoholic, you know. the ability not to recall the reasons that I shouldn't be drinking. And that was 82. I actually made it to this program in 1989. And the job was on the line. And mind you, I was earning 208 hours a year annual leave and 104 hours a year sick leave. And I was out of leave, you know. I had been using this doctor. By that time, any time I didn't show up at work, I'd had to bring a doctor's excuse or whatever. And I knew this doctor at the time. For $10, I can get in doctor's excuse, you know. And I was on my way to work one morning. It was freezing rain that morning. And I remember stopping at the service station. I remember getting back in the car. To this day, I can't tell you if I paid for that gas or not. And I remember coming to about 9 miles out of the way. And, you know, and it took me a few minutes to figure out where I was. And, you know, I don't think I had 8 hours of leave on the books nowhere, man. And I finally got turned around, and you know, I was getting back on track. I'm contemplating in my head, do I go to work today or not? You know, and I was coming up to this intersection, and I don't know if I blacked out again, but anyway, I was going too fast to make the turn, and so I turned anyway, and you know, I sideswiped this car, and I remember pulling over to the side of the road, and thinking to myself, you know, if the cops show up, you know, you going to jail. And I pulled off. And I went back home. I called this doctor up. And I had, you know, I had stopped at the liquor store prior to stopping the service station. And I put away probably half of that pint. And, you know, I called the doctor up and I said, you know, I didn't ask for a doctor's excuse. For some reason, I said I need help. And she knew what kind of condition I was in. She said, don't stop drinking. Let me see if I can find you a bed. And I was living in Suitland, Maryland at the time, man. And she called me back about an hour later. And she said that, you know, I think I can get you a bed up at Prince George's Hospital Center. Detox. And I said, okay, now I'm swearing off drinking again. Now I can call my job and say, look, I'm going to get help. You know, and I drove myself to Prince George's Hospital from Suitland, Maryland. And, you know, it took about an hour to figure out whether I could get in there or not. And I swore off drinking. I only have to remind you, I still got that half a pint under my seat. And as soon as I found out I had a bed, you know, everything changed. Well, I might as well go finish that off, you know. And, man, I was in there about 3 days before they could even give me meds, man, because my blood alcohol level was so high. And ended up having a seizure that third night in there. And, you know, I stayed in there for a week. I got out on that Saturday, man, and then, you know, they sent me on my way with a bottle of Dilant for my seizures, you know. And that following Sunday, I went to my first AA meeting. And it was a speaker's meeting, and the guy speaking was telling my story almost word for word. And I was like, them folks over at the hospital, they told this guy to say this stuff. I'm still real important, you know, at this time, man. And I don't know what it was, man. I heard something in that meeting. I went to a meeting that Monday night. And, you know, somehow I got enough out of this program just not to be miserable, irritable, and discontent when I wasn't drinking. And, you know, I got a sponsor and name only, you know. Didn't work any steps. You know, when I got back here in 2007, I had a book that was signed on the front cover, you know, Good Luck from the Cheltenham Group, 1989. And when I got here in 2007, that's the first time I opened that book. And, you know, I didn't work any steps. You know, I was still a liar, thief, and a cheat. You know, but life got good anyway, just for the simple fact that I wasn't drinking. You know, I was still running my own show, you know. Like I said, life got good, you know. Some honest, not so honest. A lot of it was penciled in, you know. You know, life was good. I remember one time, one day I came home from work, and my favorite place to drink was in the basement. It was a unfinished basement. There wasn't anything down there but the laundry room, and I would finish off a bottle, and I'd just tuck it in the corner somewhere. And I remember coming home from work, and I looked at my driveway, and the lady I was living with at the time, she'd taken them bottles, and she lined them up, spaced them out about 2 foot apart, all the way across the driveway, and there was about 15 rows of them. And I pulled up and saw that, man, I wanted to burn that place down. You know, she done exposed me like this, man. I was just done. And I had to leave my car in the street and pick up all these bottles, man. I wanted to choke that woman, you know. But anyway, like I said, life got good. You know, like I said, some honest, some penciled in. And, you know, I was, at the time, I thought I had 3 years to go on this job that I should have lost. And, you know, I think I celebrated five years that first time through. I honestly don't remember. I honestly don't remember that sobriety date. Now I know why I didn't have one. You know, this went on till 2004. 2004, you know, like I said, I thought I had 3 years to go on this job. I just sold a house in Sterling. I had rental properties in Dumfries. I was building a house in Culpeper. I had more money than I ever owned in my life. And we went on a cruise. And like the story in the book said, there wasn't a cloud on the ride. You know, 2 days into this cruise, I decided to take a drink. And this was September 2004. And, you know, my wife, we were in the program together. She had 15 years at the time without drinking. I don't call it sobriety today. And 2 days into this cruise, we decided to take a drink. And, you know, and we come up with this garbage about what happens on the ship stays on the ship. We're going to go back and be normal people. Or she liked to call it dumb and dumber. You know, since I'm telling the story, she's dumber. But, but you know, and I thought everything was going to be fine, man. You know, and I guess y'all know that it wasn't, man. It didn't take long at all, man. You know, I can remember around October, you know. I'm already missing time off work again, you know. And I was really afraid, you know. I'm like, man. But like I said, it never dawned on me to come back here. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I was up at the office, the main office. It's October 15th. And I was talking with the lady who works in personnel, and I was joking with her. I said, you know, y'all get on my nerve around here. Pull up my stuff, see when I can retire. And she kind of chuckled a little bit. She said, you know, if you use your sick leave as years of service, you can go now. And by the way, I had 3 years worth of sick leave on the books. You know, this was October 15th. October 30th, they was having my retirement party. You know, and buddy, it was downhill from there. This guy I had worked with, was familiar with through the work I was doing, with where I was working, and he called me up one day, said, you want a job? I said, man, I don't know, man, I just retired. He said, look, man, he said, I need somebody. He said, man, if you want the job, just give me the Social Security number, man, and show up Monday. So I did that. I got a company truck, worked for this plumbing outfit, and you know, that went good for a little while. You know, the guys that I was working with over there liked to drink too, so you know it wasn't going to last long. And you know, I was going out to work one morning, man. I had to drive from Culpeper over to Waldorf. And, man, I was already too drunk, man, and I thought about it. I said, man, I better not chance it today. And, you know, wow, that was my, you know, I don't think I drew a sober breath, man, for quite a long time, because I left that man's truck parked in my driveway for about 6 months before I could sober up enough to take his truck back. I just stopped showing up. And, you know, I couldn't sober up long enough to do anything. And, man, talk about lying. My God. I remember one morning I was down in the basement. And, you know, I had a half a gallon tucked away down there. And I had the cap in this hand. And I just turned that thing up. And my wife walked through the door. And she's like, I can't believe you're drinking this early in the morning. And, you know, I had to swallow this stuff before I could get it out of my mouth. I got the cap here, the bottle here, and I'm not drinking. You know, the sad part about it is I believe that, man. I had to, you know, and things just went downhill from there, man. You know, things just got real rough. You know, I end up losing those rental properties in Dumfries. You know, make a long story short, by the time I got here in 2007, I was 146 pounds. And the house we were building when we went on that cruise was in foreclosure. The rental properties in Dumfries was gone. The money we had in the bank was gone. And I had no job. And, man, I'd swallow a lot of pride to come crawling back in. I really did. And, you know, I went to detox once. I might have came to a couple of meetings. And, you know, I went back to drinking. I went back to detox. I may have come to one or two meetings, and I went back to drinking. And, like I said, I was, you know, I think the only reason I'm standing here today, matter of fact, I know the only reason I'm standing here today, is I woke up one morning and I was not all right with dying. You know, and man, I laid there on that couch, I shook, I sweated, I puked for 2 or 3 days. And August 7th, I swallowed up pride to come back here and ask you people for help. And man, looking back now, man, that was huge. You know, I really didn't want to do it. You know, but like I said, man, I was all right with dying the night before. All those months and years before. I mean, I had mirrors in my house. I saw me go down to 146 pounds. You know, I knew everybody. I knew I owed everybody. You know, I piled them letters up in the corner, man, and I was peeping out of the window at my own house. You know, wasn't answering my phone. You know, I put a fold on my phone, you know, because they got smart. See, they're starting to use different numbers to try to call me. And every time they use a new number, I would stick it in that folder, and I named that folder, Do Not Answer. So anytime they called one of them numbers, I just look at my phone, man. I stopped using the Bluetooth because I hit that thing one time, and it was one of those bill collectors, and I did not want to talk to them. You know, life got real bad. And like I say, by the time I walked back in here, you know, I was in bad shape. And, you know, I really wanted to treat the symptoms. You know, just not drinking was not good enough for me, man. I need like a bucket of money to fall out of the sky or something. And, you know, I asked this gentleman to be my sponsor probably about a week into this program. And he got right to business with me, and I didn't like him for the first 4 or 5 months. I hated him. He wouldn't feel sorry for me. He wouldn't let me feel sorry for myself. And you know, I really hated that guy for the first 4 or 5 months. But I ain't had nowhere else to go. You know, I'm almost ashamed to say that this was a last resort for me. You know, I'm really starting to admire those people that turn to God just because he's there. You know, it took a lot of pain. You know, like I say, this was a last resort. The last place I wanted to be, sitting up in Alcoholics Anonymous, holding hands with y'all, and relying on God. That was not in my plan. And, you know, like I say, my good friend Sam, I heard him say early on, you know, prior to killing alcoholic. And somehow that sunk in with me. You know, but it's amazing what this program can do, man. You know, I can remember not sleeping early on either, probably about the first 4 or 5 months, man. The lights go out, and I get in my head, man, you know, who's coming to take something from me tomorrow, man? And, you know, it was even when, you know, a few months in, it was still all about my stuff. You know, because I had done pretty good lying and cheating, man. And, you know, I guess God saw fit to start me over again, you know. And I had to go down to nothing, you know. Because, like I said, I was giving people advice and, you know, look at Chuck, and God say, hold up, player. This ain't the way it's going to happen. And, you know, I came here, man, I was in bad shape. Physically, financially, I was just ruined. And the sponsor said, we're going to start working steps. You know, and I didn't see nothing in there, you know, that was going to treat my symptoms. Man, I need money. I need to get this mess straightened out. And he said, you know, don't worry about that. See, the only thing this program can offer you is sobriety. You know, and you got to have some faith that the rest of that stuff's going straighten out. And that was that following June. You know, he came to me and said, "We going up to Founders Day." And I'm like, "Man, I really don't want to go up there." You know, see, my stuff's still on my mind. And he said, we going. And, you know, he him and another guy on a plane together, and we flew up to Akron. And, you know, we did the Founders Day thing up there, man. And one of the best things I've did in my life, he and I went to Dr. Bob's house. And probably the first time I let another human being see me pray. And we kneeled down beside the bed in Dr. Bob's house, and we did the third step prayer. And, you know, things changed. you know, if you sit in here, if you hadn't started working this program, you know, man, I strongly suggest it. You know, things changed that day, man. I remember sleeping that night, and that squirrel cage in my head wasn't, you know, my life was still jacked up, but for some reason, it just wasn't the end of the world no more. And there's just been all sorts of things happening. You know, that bucket of money didn't fall out of the sky. You know, and it's just been the advice, you know, the wisdom of the guys that went before me. I can remember standing right out there in that parking lot one day, and probably about 3 years in, and Sam came up to me and said, "Chuck, how you doing?" I said, "I'm doing all right." I said, "I'm still struggling a little bit financially." And Sam told me something I've been hearing all my life, but I didn't hear it till then. Sam looked at me and said, "Chuck, we can't spend more than we make." And he said, "You know, you got to stop it, no matter what that means." And I left this meeting. I went home. I told my wife, I said, "I'm done. You know, we've been pleading with the mortgage company, drawing every dime we can make at that house. And, you know, I said, I'm done." And she said, "You done with what?" I said, "I'm done trying to hold on to this house. You know, we're throwing every dime we make at it. And, you know, we mess around getting put out of here, we're going to be dead broke." And, she cried about it. About 35 minutes later, she came back and she said, "You know what, you're right. And coming up on summertime," and I knew they were going to cut my hours back, driving for AmeriGas, that's kind of seasonal. They don't sell a lot of gas during the summer. And I called the mortgage company up. I told them, "Look, I'm going to do the best I can. You know, I've been working with you guys. We can't seem to iron anything out." I said, "It cut my hours back at work." She wasn't working at the time, and I told him, I said, "I'll do the best I can, but, you know, I'm letting you know right now, I'm eating first." And 4 days later, this FedEx package showed up on my steps, and it was from the mortgage company. Some paperwork for me to sign, and they reduced my mortgage $1,500 a month. And it wasn't until I was willing to let go. Because, see, I wanted God to fix it, but I wanted to hold on to it. And, you know, as soon as I let go, things changed. You know, it's just amazing, man. I remember one of the first jobs I got after coming into this program. And it was through somebody in the program. His wife worked at this place. And, you know, I got to be one of the luckiest drunks in the world. You know, I've had a CDL for over 20 years, man. How I still got it, I'll never know. You know, that's it's not important now, you know. And he got me this job, and it, you know, this job kept me out of town. We did bridge inspection work, and I was running this piece of equipment called a snooper. You know, they use this to go underneath the bridges and do the inspections and all. And they sent me to North Carolina for a month. And I'm like, man. So I'm sitting down. And it wasn't a bad deal. It was a brand new piece of equipment. AC worked great. AM, FM stereo worked great. You know, I spent a week in Ocean Island. I spent a week at Holden Beach. And 3 weeks in Edenton, North Carolina. You know, we were doing this bridge across the Albemarle Sound. It was first day of striper season. You know, I'm sitting up there, AC blowing, AM, FM stereo going, and I'm mad. Because I'd been away from home for almost 3 weeks now. And one of the things my sponsor always said, if you're not grateful, you're not sober. And for some reason, that came across my mind. And, you know, I said, "God, thank you for the job. You know, because it really could be worse than this." And it's the honest God truth. About 5 minutes later, my phone rang. And it was a guy from AmeriGas here in Culpeper. He said, "Chuck." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Look, I got a full-time driver's position open. Do you want it?" I was like, "Yeah." He said, "Well, all right, then." I said, "I'm going to be down here another 3 weeks." He said, "If you want the job, I'll take the ad out of the paper and I'll see you in 3 weeks." Just as soon as I got grateful. And I can remember being in the hotel room down there. And I heard something splashing around in the pool. So I go to peek down the pool, and it's this homeless guy down there. He's kind of bathing in the pool and washing his socks. And I can't swim, but I've been going swimming. And, I'm like, "Don't they have cameras out here? Don't they see this fool in the pool down here? You know, I'm going to go call the front desk." And before I could make it to that phone, something said, "You know what? You ain't but one drink away from washing your socks in the pool somewhere." You know, just little things like that, man. This program has been truly a blessing for me. As bad a shape as I was in, I got to tell you this, one of the things my sponsor asked me to do that really ticked me off, I had a stack of mail in the corner that I wasn't opening, and he told me one evening after we had gone to a meeting, he said, "I want you to go home tonight, and I want you to open all that mail, and he said, I want you to respond to every last one of them." And I wanted to choke this guy, man. That was my biggest fear ever, man. And I went home and I did it. You know, he hadn't lied to me so far. But I was convinced that this was going to be the first one. And, I called those people up. I ain't got no money for these people. He said, "You're going to get honest for the first time in your life. You're going to tell them people why you got in the bind, what you're doing about it, and you're going to ask them to help you. You're going to ask these people to work with you." And to make a long story short, it took about 3 years to straighten that mess out. Like I said, that bucket of money didn't fall out of the sky. But today, my mortgage hadn't been late in almost 2 years. It's been paid on the first. And you guys taught me that. And I'm not saying that to brag by any means. You guys taught me that. You guys taught me how to be a father. You taught me how to be a son. You taught me how to be an employee. You taught me how to be a husband. You taught me how to be a friend. I came through these doors thinking I knew it all. Man, it was just amazing to find out at my age all that misinformation I grew up with. Wasn't none of it real. Especially the stuff that I'd made up to justify, what I was doing or what I was thinking. And then I remember going to do this fourth step with my sponsor. He didn't ask me, he kind of told me, gave me a date, said we're going to do the fifth step then. And we were riding up to this meeting together, and there was one thing that I was not going to put in there. I was going to take this to the grave with me. And we coming up the road, and he kind of got some tears in his eyes. He said, "I had a dream a couple of weeks ago, and I called some aunts and uncles, some family members, to kind of find out, without running risk of telling this story, but it was the same thing that I was going to leave out of my fourth step." And we wasn't talking about anything. He hadn't brought it up, I went home that evening, and I put it in my fourth step, and I did my fifth step with him that following weekend. you know, just some of the little miracles that happened, man, because I was going to take that to the grave with me, you know. And I knew from the first time through, you know, because y'all told me the first time, you know, just the amount of time. You don't work the steps, man, just the amount of time. I can, you know, I remember celebrating that third anniversary, that first time through. And I know today this guy knew what he's talking about. And he came up to me at my third anniversary. And he said, man, I got to be honest with you. He said, man, I was betting that you wouldn't make it. You know, how right that guy was. You know, I'm telling you, man. Because for me, I mean, you know, people have been talking to me, trying to get me to do those steps the first time through. But if you hadn't drank for 3 or 4 years, you're not going to convince me that I need to do anything else. You know, the longer you stay around here and not do those steps, the less important they become. You know, I know that's what happened for me. And, you know, it was just a matter of time. You know, I don't know if I was lucky or what, you know. I played around with this thing for 16 years, you know, and it almost killed me. You know, today I'm working the steps. You know, I got a home group. I do service work. You know, got a big book study that I go to all the time on a regular basis. And, you know, I've been carrying the meeting into the Boxwood for almost a year now. And, man, to see some of them, man, show up out here, man, that's a blessing. You know, because sometimes you think it's just a waste of time, but it's never a waste of time. You know, if only one person hears it, man, you know, that's the greatest feeling in the world. You know, I probably sponsored 4 or 5 guys. First guy sponsors coming up on 5 years. It's got a good program. I can remember it was probably shortly after I did my 5th step with my sponsor. This guy came up to ask and asked me to sponsor him. And I'm like, I don't know about this, man. So I called my sponsor and you know, I said, Rich, this guy asked me to sponsor him, man, and I ain't sure I'm ready. He goes, what do you mean you're not ready? He said, if you do it by the book, it's impossible to do it wrong. You know, he said, just do the same things I did with you. You know, and that guy's coming up on 5 years. I got some that's in and out, you know. The first one didn't make it. I took it kind of hard. I took it personal, you know. But that's not on me. I can't get anybody sober. You know, I can only help people that want to help themselves. You know, and everybody that actually responds, no, don't want to be sober. You know, some of them just want the consequences to die down. You know, one thing I was taught, we don't shoot our wounded. You know, they may not be ready now, but if they come back 5, 6 months from now and they're ready, you know, we don't shoot our wounded. You know, work with them. You know, can't give this thing to anybody. They have to want it. You know, I got a grandson that desperately needs this program. You know, and I had to let that go. I had to let it go, man. He's got his journey, just like I had mine. And you know, the only way I can let that boy down is to show him that this program don't work. You know, he's got to get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And if I stay sober, just maybe, when he gets sick and tired, he'll say, well, this thing worked for granddad. Let me give it a try. You know, I cannot interfere with his journey. You know, the one thing y'all talk about, I didn't have to let him interfere with mine either. You know, because for me, man, those footprints in the sand, is not from August 5th, 2007. You know, it was all those years, and I was out there drinking and drugging, you know, doing everything I could to kill myself, doing everything I could to make somebody else want to kill me. You know, that's where the footprints in the sand are at. You know, driving up the road night after night, man, when I started having those seizures, you know, alcohol was just like gasoline to me. You know, I was actually afraid to drive if I wasn't drinking. Now, I wouldn't want to have a seizure and hurt somebody. You know, and it's amazing, man. You know, it's only through the grace of God that I'm standing here. You know, and to do all that drinking and driving, man, never got a DUI. You know, I know it's got a lot to do with that 16-year gap in there. You know, it was a different time in 89. You know, I remember one cop taking my keys, said, "I get off my ship in 4 hours, I'll bring your keys back." You know, mothers gets drunk driving, changed all that. You know, and I know it's because of that 16-year gap that I'm still sitting here with a commercial driver's license today, you know. And it's just been an amazing ride. You know, I wish I'd have got this thing the first time around. But, you know, that wasn't what it was meant to be. You know, like I said, I got enough out of this program that first time through not to be miserable, irritable, and discontent when I wasn't drinking. But I didn't change anything. Still a liar, still a thief, still a cheat. And, you know, like I said, man, I took that first drink without a thought. You know, there was nothing wrong. I was on a cruise, man. You know, money in the bank, house getting built in Culpeper, rental properties in Dumfries, 230 pounds. You know, I took that drink just as, you know, and he said, you know, we're not going to do this when we get off the boat. You know, that didn't happen. And y'all told me it would happen. Thank God it only took 3 years for this disease to break its foot off in my behind. You know, and like I said, the only reason I showed up back here, I was not all right with dying. You know, I knew I was dying. I knew I was losing all my stuff. I was right there. Hell, I was stacking the mail in the corner. You know, I had mirrors in there, but I could not make that more important than my drinking and drugging. You know, it's amazing what some honesty and willingness will do, man. You know, and it just keeps getting better, you know. And it's just tip of the iceberg, man. Wife and I are starting our business, and hopefully this time next year I'll be doing it full time, you know. The sky's the limit, you know. You know, all those things I thought I wasn't worthy of. You know, I really don't deserve to be here. You know, it's nothing I did. I lost my sister about 3 years ago. And this same woman had to sleep with her pocketbook on her pillow. I stole from everybody in the house when I was coming up. And nobody in the house trusted me. And when she passed away about 3 years ago, she had put everything in my name. You know. And I like to say, the same woman that had to sleep on with a purse on a pillow. You know. It's just amazing. You know. How other people can see it. You know. And making that amends process, man. A lot of the people that I owed amends to aren't around anymore, man. I can remember, like I said, you know, I thought because my dad wouldn't give me the things I wanted, that he hated me, and I told myself I hated him. I can remember, you know, when we buried that man, I didn't shed a tear. You know, I had to believe that. You know, I left home at 16. I didn't write a letter, didn't make a phone call for 9 years, you know. I had to believe the things that I was telling myself. I couldn't do it otherwise. You know, and you know, all those relationships are mended now, the ones that are left. You know, and, you know, my mom did get to see me sober. You know, and I hate her. I'm one of those what they call change life, baby. I'm the youngest, and I'll be 58 tomorrow. So, you know, she kind of lost it going through menopause, man, and I hate her for that. You know, but she did get to see me sober. You know, and for the most part, the people I had to make amends to, all they wanted was, dude, we're just glad you're not drinking anymore. You know, forget about all that other stuff. You just don't go back to drinking, and you fine with us, you know. It's been an amazing ride. And for all you guys that were here and looked up and saw me walk through those doors at 146 pounds, you know, thank you for being here. You know, I couldn't have done it without you. But anyway, that's my time.